Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the awesome GM Gerrymander, Jeremy French, and the Mad Wizard Sean Merwin. Today, we've got Chris, JT, and myself, Ange, and we're going to talk about Matt's article, 100 Overland Descriptors Table. And we're gonna do some world building with that tool. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Chris, JT, share with us one of your favorite RPG settings. And does that change if you're a player versus a GM? Chris?
It's super hard for me. I have, like, two favorite RPG settings because there's two settings that I prefer to play games in all the time if I can. One of them is Eberron, because who doesn't love Eberron? I mean, like, it's like fantasy pulp mashup that I love. Plus, you know, you can throw your noir in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, you have to do some work to get the game to play that way, usually because it's D&D, and D&D doesn't do pulp. D&D does pulp okay, but doesn't do noir so well. And the other one is in the Dresden Files universe. If I can play anything, any role-playing game in the Dresden Files universe, that's where I prefer to play. Because aside from any homebrew stuff, Dresden Files universe and Eberron are the two places I've probably played the most role-playing games.
What about you, JT?
So for me, to play in as a player, I got to go with Galarian, which is the Pathfinder kind of default world.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love what James Sutter and his team did with building out that world, because it is incredibly diverse and different depending on what part of the world you're in. But it's also, I don't know, cohesive and coherent at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All the different puzzle pieces fit together to build this larger landscape. And I just love how they did that. Because, you know, one nation does not live in isolation when it's got neighbors. And I think they did a really good job with Galarian in doing that. So, and yeah, it's kind of your more or less stereotypical fantasy world, but it's got its own flavors, its own twists. And that's what I like about it.
What about as a GM? Do you have a difference there?
As a GM, I got to go with my homebrew because I know it inside and out. It's called Loremoor. I've actually got the domain name, loremoor.com. And on there, you can find my wiki where I basically just slung my notes up there for anybody to consume or use as they please. Maps, cities, deities, I mean, you name it. It's up there. I did a quick count of pages on the site before we started recording. I've got about 1,400 pages, a little more than 1,400 pages on that website, detailing just gobs and gobs and gobs of stuff. And that 1,400 pages only covers one continent. I have all the continents mapped. I've only got one continent out of six detailed.
That's awesome.
So how about you, Ange? What about you as a player? What do you like to play?
I'm going to kind of go with two here, because like Chris, I love Eberron. I love Eberron so much. As a player or as a GM, I love that setting. I've been running an off and on campaign, very epic campaign. Like, they have quests that are taking them all over the globe that they have to do to stop some impending doom that they're not even sure what's happening. But I've been running that off and on since 2011, and I just love being able to dive into the world and find the little bits of information that have been seeded there by Keith Baker and the other writers who've worked on the setting, and just pull them and then adapt them to whatever I need, because it's got such a great... It really does mash up that pulp and D&D feel together really well. But the other one I'm going to call out is my friend Tristan's homebrew setting, which is a homebrew setting he's probably been working on since the late 80s, early 90s. And he's probably run a campaign in it with every version of D&D that has ever been. I got to play in it in a campaign with 4th edition D&D that is one of my all-time favorite campaigns. One, because even though we only got to play once every few months, we still, you know, kept a very cohesive story. Our characters were deeply involved in the world, and it was a campaign we actually finished. We completed our epic mission that we were trying to destroy this thing called the Wrath Stone, that could give somebody, especially a necromancer, all powerful powers. And we successfully destroyed it. And then what he did is, for 5th edition, he advanced the timeline 20 years and we started a new campaign in a different location, but everything that our characters did in the previous campaign have affected things and changed things for how the world works, and I just love his ability to do that. Because his previous campaigns have also affected and fed into what's happened as he advances the timeline 20 years each time he jumps editions.
That sounds fun. I love where the world is alive. You know, it's a character mm-hmm. unto itself, and the interactions that the PCs have with the world change the world, and that should be reflected. So I like that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I have to control my fangirl squee every time he NPCs one of our old characters in a cameo. I'm like, I know this character. And what's also funny is the new players getting to know those old characters and developing relationships and feelings about those NPCs that used to be our PCs. It's awesome. Anyway, let's dive right into this topic. Matt's article gives a list of 100 different things you can use to help create a setting. List includes everything from terrain to inhabitants and everything in between. We are each going to roll percentile dice twice, get 6 numbers, and we're going to find out what those items are on the list, and then we're going to build our setting from that. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead and give us 2 rolls?
But I need to get dice.
Well, why didn't you have them out already?
I got a die. 45.
45, all right.
And then 97.
I always like the high numbers because you're like, ooh, is that good or bad? All right, so 45 in Matt's list is cold, snowy, covered in a layer of snow, snows often.
Ooh.
So that's interesting. And 97, way at the bottom of the list.
Magic people.
Most people Ooh. Either know a few magic tricks or have very minor magic items. Oh, that's cool.
I'm totally into that.
Okay, JT, give us your numbers.
All right, my numbers.
Oh, and
yes.
Just calling it right now, if we get any duplicates, we obviously reroll.
That's fair. All right, first number up, 57. Second number up. 14.
All right, I got your 57 right here.
All right, what is 57?
Vegetation grassland. There is rolling grasslands with only grass, scrub, and isolated trees.
All right.
Ooh. Sounds like the tundra.
Yeah, and 14. Air floating. Features floating rocks, plants, buildings, or whatever else you'd like. So stuff be floating.
Ah.
Interesting.
All right.
Okay, here's my 2. 24.
Okay.
And 7.
So 24 is inhabitants, lowlives, slimes, fungus monsters, and insects. Nice. And then 7, scrolling up a little bit, is fire, volcanoes, and other geothermal activity. So we've got a wild range here of stuff to riff on.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting mix there.
So where do we want to start?
Where do we want to start? Gee.
I like to start often with what are the geographical kind of things.
Yeah, I kind of do the same.
So we have vegetation of grasslands. We have it's cold and snowy too. And we have these floating air features.
Yeah.
And then there's volcanoes.
And then there's volcanoes. So is it the is it the volcanoes that separate the cold and snowy place from the grasslands?
Maybe. Oh, I just had something click. Have you guys heard of these creatures that live in like deep sea, like, you know, we're talking like deep trenches in like the Atlantic and Pacific, and they live next to volcanic vents. And they can only live in this like 2-foot range because the water is too cold and will kill them. The volcanic vent is too hot and will burn them. But the balance between this really deep cold water and this volcanic activity gives them like this 2-foot biosphere where they're like, they look like crawfish, but they can live in this like tiny little area.
Huh.
And I'm wondering if we could leverage that somehow where we've got some fungus people living on volcanoes, but they can do so because it's snowing all the time.
I was thinking, why don't we just go with the giant crawfish things, but instead of living in the water, they live on the floating rocks that float in that area around the volcano between the volcano and the cold lands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, because we do have floating rocks and such. So yeah, mm-hmm. the rocks could float like just above the lava flows or whatever.
Or if we want to really, really be terrible, we say that the crawfish are actually like man-sized or bigger, these things, and they're the things that fly and float.
Oh!
I like the idea better of them living on the floating rocks. But one of the things I was thinking, looking at this, and considering we've got a magical people that live in this region, what if this volcano and the floating rocks are all the result of a cataclysm they caused in the past when they got a little too big for their britches and let their magic get out of control?
I mean, we could do better than cataclysm. Like, that's like played out, right? Like, what else can we do? Like, especially it's not their fault. Like, how can we make that better? Like, what's the better version of that? Come on, we're the gnomes, too. We can do better. Like, was it a cataclysm? Was it something that came from like outside of reality that caused it to happen and they just happen to be also here? Are they the people that came from outside of reality and found a whole group of people that had done this?
Well, what if because this land is so cold and snowy, they were trying to possibly come up with something to make their section more habitable?
Oh.
And they broke into something that should have been left untouched.
See, now that's interesting. They magically tried to terraform this area and they messed it up anyway.
Oh, I like that. Not necessarily a cataclysm, just a big oops.
So they magically tried to terraform the area. Did they make the volcanoes then?
Maybe they woke them up. What if they were like dormant or extinct and these crawfish folks, these fungus crawfish folks woke up the volcanoes, you know, by accident? And it's not necessarily cataclysmic, but it's definitely has not been beneficial to them. They've had to adjust by living on these floating rocks that are apparently large enough to be considered grasslands, because we do have a 57 roll in there that we haven't touched upon yet, which is the grassland vegetation.
Yeah, I'm all about those floating rocks being like one of the more habitable places in this world, because everything else is cold and snowy, but because of the rocks and where they came from, it's actually, over the course of time, it turned into this like this habitable grassland.
Yeah, and what if each of the floating rocks, because they came from the volcanoes erupting and the magical, basically the magic and the volcanoes erupting together, each one of the floating rocks has its own geothermal properties that lets it maintain a more temperate environment.
That is awesome.
I love all of that. I also like the idea that one of the industries or the businesses that go on in this world is that people, they like harvest magic from these floating rocks. That's how everybody has magic.
Oh,
yeah.
And that may be why they come into conflict with our crabs.
Are these crabs intelligent, or are they not intelligent, or are they so alien that that the normal people can't understand them?
I like the alien intelligence myself. The you know, sure, we could communicate with them because they learned our language and we haven't figured out theirs, but there's definitely a communication barrier there. I kind of like I'm spacing on the character's name from Guardians of the Galaxy, the fellow that takes everything literally.
Drax.
Drax.
Drax, yes. They could be, all of them could be like Drax, to some degree. Maybe a spectrum of Drax, right?
Drax himself is a spectrum.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, I could see a definite communication barrier. But maybe part of their magic is a pseudo lie detector. So even though they take colloquialisms directly as a literal thing, they get something that says, okay, you just said something that's a lie, so I'm not going to believe you and just disregard that statement. And they don't want to tip their hat, so they don't let the PCs know that they've got this ability, and they're smart enough to work around it without tipping their hand here, you know?
I love all of this. That's great. I love it. So what's the conflict of the world then?
I got this strange idea. Since it's snowy over a volcano, maybe there's some sort of sacrifice to the gods going on where you freeze on the way down, but don't worry, you'll thaw out at the end, you know, as you hit the lava bed.
So what is that? Why is that a conflict for the world? Like, that's a thing that has to be done, but why does it have to be done? Or who doesn't want it to be done?
I could see these fungus people perhaps taking tribute or volunteers for the sacrifice. And due to a communication issue, somebody in the party or somebody the party is associated with, like a backstory NPC, that accidentally tributes themselves. And so the PCs have to go rescue either their party member or a valued NPC from this sacrifice.
What if the incident that caused all of this to happen it's not necessarily a done deal.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, it's still ongoing, and these sacrifices are actually, you know, unknowing to the people that are doing them because they're lost in the religiousness of it and the, you know, the we do this and the gods are happier. The sacrifice is actually part of the thing that keeps things in a stable state, but it's been getting out of hand. Like, the volunteering is not so much of a volunteer anymore, and there's starting to be this uprising among the people against this, but the PCs are going to need to figure out how to stabilize the volcanic activity, the volcanic and magical activity that are continually threatening this region.
I want to talk about this volcanic activity and how it came about now. Like, I want to get into it so bad. Like, these people, somebody showed up from somewhere with magic to terraform this area, and they messed it up. So, like, it's like the magic's still down there trying to, like, finish doing its job or whatnot, but it never gets enough energy, or maybe as it runs out of energy, it starts breaking down, which is messing things up even more, so they have to keep sacrificing people because life energy is the thing that keeps the spell going.
Oh. I like it. And this would make for a great dungeon delve, you know, through lava tubes and who knows what else underground, trying to find the source of magic to either eliminate it or stabilize it.
Have you both seen Moana?
Yes.
I have not.
Kind of spoilers here, but I'm picturing something a little like the heart of, like a quest along the lines of, like, the heart of Tafiti, where you think you have to do one thing, but they actually, like, they're going down there to think they need to stop the activity that, you know, stop the magical stuff from happening, but what they really need to do, and this is something the players would have to learn as they get down there, is actually let it do its job and actually give it enough power to do the thing it needs to do.
I like that. That's good.
Mm-hmm. I really like the idea that these magical crayfish people, when they showed up, so, like, history is skewed, right? People don't really know exactly what happened,
right?
Because otherwise this would be easily solved, right?
Right.
So history is skewed. So, like, race of people shows up, tries to terraform the planet, the magic goes awry, right? And then what nobody knows is that the crayfish fungal people are actually just a same descendants as the people who are wandering around. It's just that they got altered in some way because of the magic. So they're really all related. And between all of them, like, aside from just going down into the dungeon, like, also conversing and learning the history from everyone together is what would help them solve the problem too.
That's sweet. That's good.
I like that a lot.
Oh, man, I love these fungal crayfish things. This is such a good idea, JT. Like, I'm like, oh, that's amazing. They're just like, and they have to live on the rocks, right? Because if they come off the rocks, they die.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
It's either if they're too close to the volcano, it's too hot, or if they come down off the rock, it's too cold.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't handle either extreme or even minor variations in temperature. They've got to be in that sweet middle spot for them.
I would totally run games in this world. I would play games in this world. Like, there's a mystery going on. There's, like, people to interact with. There's a dungeon to go explore. It's really good.
I can see this as, like, a double session one shot at a con, like an all day 8-hour thing, or even an ongoing. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
My brain's kind of wrapped into the hey, this would be a cool, like, you know, 4-hour break, same people, another 4 hours, and let's finish this off and do an epic one shot with it.
I would do it as a long con. I would run 3 sessions. I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three, 4 hour sessions, I think, would be perfect, because then you could have that beginning, middle,
there
end
you go.
Type feel
yeah.
to it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be just enough time to let them, you know, first session, learn what the world is, learn all the unique aspects of it. Second session, start understanding what the problem is, start understanding what the history is. And then third session, fixing or breaking everything completely.
Yep.
Right, right. Yeah, bring us to the epic ending one way or the other.
So is that it?
I would love to keep going, but I think that's all we got time for.
I mean, we've been at this for 22 minutes, so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think we've got some interesting stuff in there, but that really shows kind of what, you know, just building off a list like that can really give you. And, you know, if you're looking to start your own homebrew campaign setting, taking something like this and just grabbing what you got can really spark some interesting stuff.
Can I make some comments about what we just did? Because I think it's really cool.
Yeah, go for it.
So when you're like building worlds out, everyone out there, like one, if you can find some people to do it with, way more fun.
Yes.
Don't be afraid to be like, let's try that a different way. Also, be very encouraging about the ideas that are thrown out too. And when you get stuck, start asking questions that make sense. Like, well, why is this happening? Like, what is going on here? And then answer those questions. And that's kind of how you can build out your world. That's pretty much what we did.
Pretty much. Yeah, and I've got two closing thoughts here. They're real quick. So, number one, thanks to Matt for putting together the list. Awesome list.
Uh-huh. Very awesome.
And number two, if anybody out there actually moves forward with the fungal crayfish floating over volcanoes while being snowed upon, please reach out and let us know. I want to know how that I want to know how it goes. I want to know the details.
Me too.
Oh, absolutely. Before we completely close out of our topic, if you enjoy map making, like actually making designing maps, and want to try your hand at putting something like this together, check out Matt's latest article on the Stew, which is, I believe, a map he created using this list, and contact him at mapcom.gnomestew@gmail.com. He's got a project he wants to work on with making maps and stuff.
Mm.
And he asked, if we talked about his article without him, he asked that we throw that in there.
No problem. We just did.
Oh, absolutely.
Yay, Matt.
So, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon.
Woo.
This ad brought to you by All the Wrong Turns, brought to you by outdated GPS data. I, for one, am grateful for my technology overlords and our phone's mapping program. If you are enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like one of the many other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out. Chris, read that.
Sure. Zhang Yu Hustle. Train along fellow students Eric Farmer and Eli Kurtz in Zhang Yu Hustle. Eric and Eli make their kung fu stronger by watching wuxia films, then discussing how to apply their observations to game design.
You can find all of us at gnomestew.com, at gnomestew on Twitter, and gnomestew on Facebook. Chris, JT, where else can we find you on the internet?
MisdirectedMark.com, that is the home for this podcast and many other podcasts, as we already said. At MisdirectedMark on Twitter, that is the network handle. Also at the Light 101, but you know, any of those places. G+ community, oh my god, go to the G+ community. MisdirectedMark G+ community, that is the central hub of all of our Mac making efforts. So there you go, and world building efforts. There you go.
JT, how about you?
Pretty easy to find me online. It's a one-stop shop for everything. It's jtevans.net. And in the top right corner of the site, on every page, you'll see links to all my social media. So it's all out there, including some obscure ones that I should probably just go delete because I never go there. So, hey, Ange, what about you? Where can we find you online?
Best place, other than the places that have already been mentioned, is on Twitter. You can find me as orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. And otherwise, I'm hanging out in the Misdirected Mark G+ community and elsewhere around the internet.
Hey, if you want to chat with Ange like live, you just go to Misdirected Mark on Twitch on Tuesdays at 8:45 Eastern. That Ange is always there almost in the chat room. So there you go.
Almost. Although I'm usually at work, so I kind of got to do work stuff while I'm listening. So sometimes I'm not as attentive to the chat room as I would like.
Hmm.
So, do you guys think we avoided the Stew this week?
No, we're going to get hucked into the volcano while freezing on the way down.
That's right. That's exactly it. On the bright side, because we're freezing on the way down, as soon as they throw us into the Stew, we'll have a bit of time to climb back out because we won't boil right away.
Exactly.
Ice cubes in the tomato soup.
Right?
Mm-hmm.